Hello, it's Wayne Perry, the TV carpenter here. Can I ask you a question? Are you a DIY doer? Meaning, do you like DIY? Do you like fixing things in your home? Or does it frighten you and you'd rather somebody else did it, like your other half, or you paid somebody to come and do it? The reason I'm asking the question is, it's either one or the other. People don't realise anyone can be a DIY doer. And for me, when I say that, I don't mean the big jobs. I don't mean putting up shelves. I don't mean laying laminate flooring. For me, DIY is about having a safe house for you and your family. So when I say safe, knowing how the smoke alarm works and why does it beep, or knowing how to turn your water off if your house is flooding, or if the fuse trips and your electrics go out, knowing what all the buttons on the fuse board do. So that's a safe home. I think everyone should have that. Everyone should have a practical home, meaning everything should work as it should. So if your curtain tracks falls out the wall, you know how to put it on. Or if your toilet seat breaks, you know how to change it. But also, I think everyone should have a beautiful home, knowing what paint types to use, knowing how to upcycle some furniture. If you would like a safe, practical and beautiful home, let me teach you the DIY around it. All you need to do is join the DIY Doers Facebook group. You can find it on Facebook, or you can go to my website, thetvcarpenter.com, and I'll link you straight through to there. Let me help you create a safe, beautiful, and practical home for you and your family. On today's show, I talk with Ross and Chris, the co-founders of the Curious Department, as we talk about their maximalist designs, which include fabrics, wallpapers, and even a dinner set.
We decided to come up with our own brand that sold the things that we couldn't find in the shops, basically, the things that we wanted in our homes. And that's how the Curious Department was born. But it was also inspired by a weird cabinet that I had in my very first flat. And it's a cabinet of curiosities. And I filled it with treasures from all over the world, from travelling and gifts that I was given. And we just kind of liked this maximalist approach that we had in that flat. And that kind of inspired the brand look and feel for the Curious Department as well. So obviously we use a lot of gold and brass colours and darker colours as well, and that was really where the vision came from.
Hello and welcome to TV Carpenter Podcast with me, your host, Wayne Perry. This is a podcast where I interview my friends from the world of interior design and garden makeover shows, all with the aim of inspiring you to create your dream home. I would like to say a huge thank you to my sponsor, Thorndown, for sponsoring this podcast. And what is really interesting is how this podcast has developed. It started off very much DIY and teaching people, and it's evolved into more speaking to my guests and discovering their journey. And what I always find is at the end of a lot of my interviews, a lot of my guests go, oh my God, I haven't really thought about my career. I haven't really thought about what I've achieved. And I asked the same question to my sponsor, Thorndown, the Eco Paint Company. And I asked them what their proudest moment was. And it was really lovely to hear what they said and reflect on what they've achieved so far.
So as a company, our proudest moment was being able to pay the rent for the first time. So we're a fairly young manufacturing company, and it takes a lot of work and a lot of investment in the setup years. So yes, having that moment where you go into profit and paying the rent doesn't make you wince is pretty epic, really. But also winning the IF Design Award last year was an incredibly amazing moment, as it recognised all the hard work and the beautiful design work that went into creating the Thorndown brand. And we think it's a stunning design, and it's just so nice to have a global industry recognising that as well.
I love the honesty of Caroline's answer there, that idea of that first time you can pay your rent in a startup company. And it's just lovely that they're such a fledgling company. Well, they've been going for a couple of years now, but everything they did and the reason why they set up the company is just because they wanted to create a paint that was, you know, as kind as possible to the environment, and then also to be recognised for that and win awards for that, I think is brilliant. And if you would like to do your part and help the environment, but whilst making over your house, you can go to thorndown.co.uk, and if you type in the code TV Carpenter, you can get 15% discount on off any of their online purchases. So you can support them and support the environment as well. This week for me has been pretty crazy. I had a crazy carpentry week, and then I was filming Interior Design Masters. And what I love, and I've realised about doing that show, is because there's so many contestants, particularly at the beginning, it's like an assault on your senses. So, you know, I work in a few of the rooms, but then you'll go and visit some of the other rooms and the designers where the other builders and carpenters are. And I've come to realise how everyone has a different take. Obviously, they're all doing a similar theme at the moment, but everyone's room was so different. It's like an assault on the senses. And how important paint is, and how important wallpaper is, and fabrics, you know, everyone's upholstering or... And it is amazing to see how everyone comes up with some amazing schemes just by using fabric, wallpaper and paint, ultimately, which means it rolls in so nicely with my next guest, Ross and Chris, the co-founders of the Curious Department. Now, I discovered the Curious Department on Instagram about a year ago and instantly went, whoa, I like these. And their take is quite maximalist, but it's very rich and it's very elegant and dark and moody, but then opulent. And they've just released a new collection. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, whoa, I've got to get these guys on the podcast. And I think you're going to absolutely love what they have to see. So after you've listened to this podcast, you must go to their Instagram, The Curious Department, and you'll know exactly what I mean. So this is the main event. This is me chatting with the co-founders, Ross and Chris, from The Curious Department.
Hello, Chris and Ross from The Curious Department. Thank you for coming on the TV Carpenter podcast.
Hello.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks for having us. Yeah.
So just so my listener knows, we've had to separate these two. We've put them in separate parts of the house with their separate computers and separate laptops. So if we overlap slightly or anything, that's why. But firstly, I just wanted to say I love your stuff. I've been kind of stalking you for quite a while on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And you recently have just released a new collection called the Heirloom Collection, which we are going to talk about. But with lockdown happening, has that caused you problems releasing this? Or has it just meant you've had a bit more time to work on it?
I'd say it's a bit of both. I mean, we had planned originally to launch this collection in September of this year. And then with lockdown hitting, a lot of our suppliers got shut down and, you know, kind of just put brakes on a lot of our plans as we geared up towards September and kind of, you know, geared up towards like the magazines and getting things submitted and getting samples done, that sort of stuff. Yeah. And then I think we just kind of thought, actually, after about 2 or 3 months of lockdown, we were just like, actually, now is the time to do it. We've got so much time in our hands. Let's just make it work. So we kind of just decided to basically cut our collection in half and launch the first half now. And then as things have started to open up again, we can now kind of go back and add some more designs, add some more colorways, and launch hopefully a few more things later on this year.
Amazing. So this is your third collection from the Curious Department. So it's a two-man team, Chris and Ross. So firstly, Ross, what's your involvement with Curious Department?
So my involvement is pretty much purely creative. So I do all the designs myself. Everything's digitally drawn on the computer and then assembled. So I assemble all the files and come up with a vision for a collection, and that's pretty much it, whereas Chris does all the other stuff.
So you hand it over to Chris then to market it.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
So Go on, sorry, Chris.
I was just saying, it's a quite good partnership in the sense that Ross comes up with a creative vision. He's really the driving creative force behind the business. And then I'm that kind of more suited kind of, you know, business head who kind of, you know, queries things and says, okay, how do we turn this into a product? How do we kind of launch it? How do we stay true to our brand? That kind of stuff. And do all the businessy side of things.
So the Curious Department started, I think you launched your online shop in 2016. How did it come about to start with? How did you guys get together and create the Curious Department?
So we are a couple both in business and in life. So we were obviously already together and we were just sat in Shoreditch in a bar, and we both have quite a big passion for interiors. And Chris had just bought a house, actually. And so I was kind of helping him come up with a bit of an idea for that. And we just got talking about kind of objects and things in the house, and that we can't always find the things that we want. And so we decided to come up with our own brand that sold the things that we couldn't find in the shops, basically, the things that we wanted in our homes. And that's how the Curious Department was born. But it was also inspired by a weird cabinet that I had in my very first flat, which I found in a junkyard, which is a brass display cabinet. It's a cabinet of curiosities. And I filled it with treasures from all over the world, from traveling and gifts that I was given. And we just kind of liked this maximalist approach that we had in that flat. And that kind of inspired the brand look and feel for the Curious Department as well. So obviously we use a lot of gold and brass colours and darker colours as well. And that was really where the vision came from.
It's interesting because on your website, thecuriousdepartment.com, one of the big strap thing I've seen written down was like, the Curious Department strives to embrace the eccentricity of clutter and pattern clashes with a splash of opulence and a dash of Art Deco. Now, I think you've lit. It is beautiful, and your brand, although it is evolving, it strikes that chord throughout.
Yeah, that's exactly what we wanted to achieve. Something that was a little bit more ostentatious, objects in the home that could strike conversations with people. So we also have a brand line, which is a small dose of high drama, and that is about.
I love that.
That is really just about making sure that everything we produce does that in the home. So we want someone to buy a cushion, put it in their home, but we don't want it to just live as the cushion on the sofa that no one really talks about. We want it to be that cushion where your friends come round and they're like, wow, I love this cushion, like, tell me about it. And so that's why a lot of our designs have stories and concepts at the heart of them, so that we can give our customers something to talk about as well. And hopefully the designs are striking enough to ignite those conversations too.
So, but when you guys, like, for example, a lot of your initial stuff, or actually all of it, like your Metamorphosis collection, the first one, you use a lot of like beetles and spiders and things. And what's lovely is you've made them look beautiful, where, you know, and you've almost not hidden them. Sometimes you hide them within the design. So it's so elegant. You don't even realize that it's really weird, creepy spider or beetle. Was that an obvious choice that you decided to do?
Yeah, I think you kind of summarized it quite well there. We like sort of designs that have more to them than meets the eye. So designs where people can get lost in them or discover more in them. And the idea of Metamorphosis was really about transformation. So we thought, well, what could we take that is not necessarily appealing to people, like insects, and how can we make them beautiful? And we used geometry and mathematics to kind of create these very ordered patterns with something that's quite chaotic in real life, the way that insects move, they behave. It's, you can't really put order and structure to that. And we wanted to do that through the designs, to transform something ugly or off-putting into something beautiful. And we felt that kind of sweet spot between the two helped us be fresh and different. And that was really, really the intention there.
Mm-hmm. So, Chris, you obviously, like you say, Ross does more of the design stuff, and you're the business mm-hmm. side of it. How have you found running a business for the last, 4 years? Like, I understand you did like a Kickstarter for your ceramic collection. So, talk to me about the point of the Kickstarter.
All right. So, yes, I mean, it's been a very interesting journey for us. As Ross said, we kind of bring skills from our previous life back into this world, and the freedom of having our own brand to do things that we couldn't normally do in our day-to-day jobs. And so we certainly have like the skills and the raw skills for the business side of things, but I mean, we're still learning as we go. And we just had to find a way to bring things to life without backing, without investors. It's just us, coming up with ideas in a bar, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So what we thought about with the Kickstarter was like, okay, well, that's great. We can sit and talk about how we're going to make bugs look amazing and brilliant, but how many other people are going to see it that way too? So we thought, well, why don't we try a Kickstarter where we don't really have to put out too much? We can kind of get some samples made, put it to the internet, see if other people really buy into those visions, into those designs. And then we can use that money to then fund bringing it to life and putting it into production. So it was kind of a good way for us to really start with very, very little capital. I mean, we literally spent a couple hundred pounds on just samples and taking photos of the samples and then selling our story, selling our vision, using Kickstarter as an amazing platform to then amplify that message. And it was just absolutely fantastic. I mean, we worked with a large number of like really good sort of Instagram influencers and bloggers like Kimberly from Swoonworthy or Emily from Pink House, mm-hmm. Bianca from French Shirt for Pineapple. Like, they really got behind us as well and just helped seed that message out, saying, hey guys, this is cool brand, they're doing this Kickstarter. And I mean, within about 2 weeks, we broke our target. It was just absolutely incredible.
What was your target? What was your initial target?
So we thought, okay, to get the production, we'd need about £5,000. And that would be, putting together the whole collection so we could sell our mugs, the bowls, the plates, and then also sell it as a full set as well. And we actually ended up raising £10,000. So we doubled our target. And it was just the most ridiculous time of year because we did it just over Christmas. Uh-huh. People are obviously trying to get presents. But of course, because of the nature of Kickstarter, you're basically putting it into pre-production. So we didn't actually ship anything until April. So everybody was kind of buying into it, but it was like, you're not going to get a Christmas present out of it. It was just kind of a very interesting time to launch it. But, as we always do, we just jump straight into it and say, well, we'll make the best of what we can, what we can do. And it was just a really good Kickstarter success story for us, and it's something that we definitely would recommend to any other kind of upcoming brands who just don't have that kind of backing financially to put their ideas out there in the world, and definitely give it a go.
Absolutely, because it is absolutely beautiful. It's this fine bone china with what's the beetle? Is it a Mandela beetle or something that goes all the way around it, and it's trimmed in gold. But the set is beautiful. I know it's on your website. Are you still selling the dinner set?
Yeah, so it's been, I think, 4 years, maybe 3 or 4 years now. We're still selling it. We've been stocked in various stores up and down the country. I think we actually have some international stockists now as well. It's one of those kind of ranges that we've always wanted to expand upon. And one of these days we'll get some time to put some more designs to that collection, I think.
I love it, the idea of time. So I know that you guys still have work, you do this, the Curious Department together, but you have your individual jobs. Chris, what's your day job, dare I say? What do you do day to day?
So my day to day jobs, I'm actually a marketing and product director for a print company. So I'm very much putting those skills to work with the Curious Department. So I kind of run the kind of business side of stuff, but my day-to-day job is, I'm up from, I guess from 7 a.m, 6, 7 a.m, and probably don't finish work till like 10. It's a very full-on day trying to juggle both a full-time job and then the Curious Department as well.
Uh-huh. And Ross, what's your job as well?
So I work as a creative director in advertising, so coming up with global campaigns for big brands, And I've done that for 12 years, and I absolutely love that job. Mm-hmm. And actually, a lot of people always ask, did you start the Curious Department so you could escape advertising? And I would say, well, no, because I've worked really hard at advertising. I love advertising. We started the Curious Department so we could have an output that was purely our brand and was that sort of uncensored creativity that we can do. And it was a nice thing to do together as well, to kind of go on a journey with our own designs and collections too.
Yeah, I think people nowadays have like portfolio careers. You know, people have lots of different things going on, and they all give different things. They all give you different things back. And like you say,
you wear many hats as well, don't you?
Oh, I do a bit of everything. You know, and it's proven quite interesting with lockdown. You know, like I said, my wife's an actress. Like literally, that whole industry has fallen flat now. So, but anyone who's got any side hustle or anything else going on, they're surviving, not just financially, but mentally. Do you know what I mean? Mm. So have it. And for you guys, having the Curious Department just means you've got the creative outlet for yourselves. With the book stops with you. So if you do a blog post, it's your blog post, not another brand's
And this is the thing. And actually, both of the jobs kind of feed each other. I've learned so much from the Curious Department about blogger partnership, asset creation, things that I didn't really do before in my advertising job. And actually those skills have been invaluable in progressing my own career in advertising, because I just have a deeper understanding of how it works now, which I can use on different brands and take those learnings, and then vice versa as well. So the things I've learned about brands in advertising, I can apply to our own.
Uh-huh. So Ross, you're the creative designer, and you do everything by hand, a computer pen. So have you always been artistic then? Has always been there?
Yeah, I have, to be fair. So my mum was a wedding cake designer, and I used to watch her and my great auntie sculpting flowers out of icing and turn them into bouquets that cascaded down 5-tier cakes. And I just found it fascinating to watch. And as a family, we didn't have a lot of money growing up, so we used to get quite crafty as well. I remember one Christmas I really wanted a particular toy, and me and my mum and my grandmother actually just made it. We sewed it together instead out of an old pillowcase. So I used to carry this pillowcase around that was kind of like a teddy. So it's always been something that we kind of do for fun, and I associate creativity with fun and connecting with people as well. I would say the answer to that question is absolutely.
And how have you found turning something in your head, a design, for example, let's talk about your heirloom collection, which is your latest collection. Mm. Like having that initial thought in your head to do, and then sitting down to say make a wallpaper, because you do some beautiful wallpaper patterns and repeats. Mm. How has that process been for you?
This question is a little bit like opening Pandora's box, because it's quite a strange and interesting process. So basically, first step is we come up with a vision, so a conceptual idea. And we can mood board things together, but that is always based on culture. So it can be historic things or pop culture that influences that. So the designs always end up being such a melting pot of ideas that people do find it quite difficult to place, but they always see something in it that they can relate to. So we get lots of people describing the heirloom collection as it looks like chapel ceilings, or I can see Celtic influences, I can see jewelry design, I can see art deco, I can see tiles, I can see all sorts of different things. And we actually love that, because to me that's a little bit of a kind of recognition that the design is fresh. It's hard to describe because there's nothing else like it. So with that in mind, I think we've had a good success with the new collection. Yeah. And that was always something we set out to achieve. But it really does come from, so the true inspiration really is it is about storytelling and heirlooms. I have a fascination with objects. So that in our house, we have hundreds of them, and you could point at any of them and I could tell you a big, long-winded story and take you on a journey about each and every one. And some of them are personal memories. Some of them represent friendship. Some of them represent nice days out, anything. And I think there's something really interesting about how stories can be so attached to an inanimate object, and emotion can be embedded in them.
Absolutely.
And that is the thought of an heirloom, isn't it? An heirloom's the ultimate expression of that, because it's touched so many people's lives, that object. And if you have that history, and you know the stories connected to it, something becomes so much more valuable, doesn't it? It could just be a rock that your grandmother used to own, and it becomes so much more important and has an intangible value that you never want to let that go.
Yeah.
And so the heirloom collection really is about taking sort of typical cues of heirloom, so jewels and chains and gold and pearls, and telling stories around them as well, with a bit of a twist, because obviously we're turning some of our insects into bejeweled insects in this collection as well.
I love, but what's really interesting is when this first came launched and I saw it, interestingly, I do a lot of trade swaps. So I worked with a jeweler recently, and I made over her new studio in exchange for her doing some jewellery for my wife. And she turned my old grandmother's ring into and recommissioned it. And this jeweler's, all she does is take recommissions and changes them into present day, but still keeping, you know, the old gold and the stones, so they've still got that sentimental value.
Yeah.
So it totally spoke to me, that whole idea of the heirloom and the jewels and the thing. But when I'm just interested to know the actual practicalities, though, of you sitting down with your pen and, like, if anyone sees the Zeladine, do you say? Is that how you say it?
Zeladine.
The Zeladine collection, which me and my wife are arguing over whether to get some the velvet fabric in rose or noir. I want the noir, she wants the rose, but we'll chat about that afterwards. But that is so intricate and so elaborate, like you said, like the Sistine Chapel roof, or quite, but also the jewels within it. Do you just sit and draw, and then hopefully it'll, you know, manage to create the repeats? And this is my carpenter brain being very practical. Yeah. So I'm interested to know how you practically manage to create a wallpaper from this craziness that you draw.
Okay. Yeah. So it always starts with a bit of a foundation. So Zeladine is a series of geometric rings at the heart of it. And once you've positioned all of those rings into place, you can test whether you've got a repeat. So you always start with a perfect square as a canvas. And then within that square, you just have to make sure that everything that's on the left is also on the right, and everything that's on the top is also on the bottom. And then it almost becomes a tile that can repeat over and over and over again. So you have to kind of keep checking as you go. I agree. It is really intricate. And I look at it now. I'm looking at one of the cushions right now. And I do think, how did I create this? Like, it's to think that it came out of my head is quite weird. But I do go into a little bit of a trance-like, obsessive sort of mode when I'm doing it. And Chris will know, like, I'll start getting up at like 5 a.m. and I'll be clicking away on the computer, and I won't leave the computer for until really late at night, and then the same again the next day, and the same again the next day, until the vision comes to life. But it really is about breaking it down into elements. So as I said, the geometry is the foundation, and once you've got that, you can start embellishing it. And to make it less overwhelming, I kind of draw things separately and then add them in. So the dragonflies, I'll draw on their own canvas so that I'm not having to take in all the complicated geometry and panic about the positioning of everything, and then I'll add it to the foundation rings, and then I'll start adding more intricate kind of details and so forth, and then eventually you build it up like a painting, layer by layer by layer, until you're happy.
So you're happy,
and yeah, and I think we are on this one.
Oh, you absolutely should be.
Yeah.
Chris, I know that your whole business is very very ethical and try to be locally sourced, but I know that you do butterflies. So when I first saw this, they were taxidermy, I was like, how is that ethical? But then I read where you get your butterflies from, and it totally made sense, and what that allows those people to do. So just tell my listener a little bit about the ethical taxidermy side of stuff and the brand.
Sure. So we've always wanted to, you know, be as responsible as we could be. You know, I think any step forward is an important step. And so everywhere we can be, we try to be as eco-conscious as we can. So whether it's recycled packaging or using compostable bags for our stationery or printing on recycled FSC certified papers, those sorts of things. When it came to the butterflies, we definitely didn't want to, we knew that we wanted to celebrate sort of the natural world, and we both have a fascination with taxidermy. And so we obviously did our research and looked into these butterfly conservation centers, where essentially they have to create these butterfly habitats to, you know, breed the butterflies and then reintroduce them back into the wild. They come from conservation farms. So they help kind of refund the local communities. They try to bring back, you know, what's lost from deforestation. And so our butterflies are actually collected when they die of natural causes. So some butterflies are actually born without mouths. They don't actually eat. They're basically just born to procreate and only live for like a month or so. So they do live full natural lives. They do get the general knocks and bumps that life brings us all. So we kind of celebrate the fact that they're not perfect, that they're as nature intended. They're butterflies that have lived a full life, and they're collected. And then Ross basically does all the hand mounting and, you know, all that process of actually creating these wonderful butterfly taxidermy creations in our studio here in London.
But I love what you've done with them, because the idea is you're celebrating them, and then they're mounted on the back of some beautiful cards that you've created and some artwork as well. So it's like the butterfly is the star, but also there's the gold guild behind the back of them.
That's our curious twist.
Yeah, really? And that's the twist about it. But it is that taxidermy has that weird thing. I like taxidermy, as in, you know, the old traditional stuff, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I'd never heard of this before. And I was like, this is brilliant, actually, because it means you can have it in your house with a conscience, knowing that actually you're doing something good by buying it as well. Do you know what I mean? So I thought that was brilliant. But you guys have won awards as well, because you talked earlier on about, you know, the cards you make and your greeting cards and things like that. So you guys won top Engaging Print Award at the Top Drawer event 2017, and Launchpad Award for the London Stationery Award. How was it winning those awards?
Well, it's definitely came as a bit of a shock to us. We never thought we would get any accolades, certainly in the early days of us launching this brand. It's been an amazing journey, obviously, but we always saw this as a bit of a hobby. You know, we're just putting our designs out in the world and just seeing what resonates with people. And so, you know, being recognized by Top Drawer and the Launchpad Award, and then obviously the success from Kickstarter, it's just been absolutely fantastic. And it just, you know, helped give us that confidence to keep pushing things forward and open us up to new audiences, and also challenge ourselves as well, and just kind of saying, okay, are we ready to take this to the next level and launch new collections and stuff? So it's been really good to just validate. And, you know, Ross is used to winning awards from his work. So, you know, it's definitely an interesting part of our journey, and something I think we want to, you know, keep going.
And also, you're judges, aren't you, on the UK Interiors Awards?
Yes, yeah, so we've just received our judges pack, so we'll be doing our judging this week. I'm not sure if we can announce which category we're judging, but we'll keep it under wraps for now.
It's a nice validation, actually, when you ask to be the judge rather than be the recipient. I always think that's an interesting way around.
Yeah, we made the shortlist a couple of years ago, actually. We lost out to Rocket St. George, which obviously they're an amazing brand, an amazing business to be a runner-up towards. So we know what it's like like to be part of that that journey of being submitting yourself and being out there in the world and knowing that, you know, amazing peers and colleagues and amazing people in the industry are reviewing your work and passing judgment and, you know, and generally, you know, amazing good things are being said about it. So, yeah. You know, we feel like it's now we're kind of now they're returning that favor, I guess.
Yeah. Ross, in your latest collection, the Heirloom collection, or actually any of your collections, what is your favorite piece amongst all of it?
This changes on a daily basis. Some days I look at that because the problem is when you design something yourself, you are incredibly critical of it, and you can always see things that you could do better. And I think that also comes from my job as a creative director. I'm always looking for ways to improve things. So it does change, and it really depends also how they're styled. And there's so many ways to style our designs that it can really show them off in different lights. But I do think the thing that I'm most proud of at the moment is Zelandine, because as I said, it was quite a labor of love to create, because it is so complicated and intricate, and I also learned things that I didn't know I could do. So a lot of the design process, I will kind of Google things and watch YouTube tutorials. And so, for instance, the actual brooch that sits at the center of the Zelandine print, which is its own cushion as well. I knew I wanted to design a brooch of some sort. I was worried about making it look good, because when you start to get into the world of gemstones, you have to get all the shines and all the reflections nice. And I was quite pleased with the results after quite a lot of hard work of trying to perfect it. But then the Tiana design as well, I learned new things on that, so I have a lot of love for that too, because that is all drawn on a Wacom, which is something I'd never done before. So the frogs on it, I drew digitally from nothing. And that was also a bit of a learning curve, but uh-huh. I was quite pleased with the results of those as well. So yeah, that pattern's quite dear to me, because it's it is actually inspired by something that my mum used to wear when I was younger. She had a sort of high fashion silk print, and it is slightly inspired by the sort of movement and the tassels that were on that.
Now, your new collection, like I say, is brilliant. And like I have been following you guys for a while. And then when this new one launched, I was like, oh, right, OK, well, I need to speak to these guys. Right, we need to get you in and have a conversation. So we come into the final question. I'm splitting it, actually. Normally, I just ask you, and first I'll ask Chris. I want you to describe a room in your dream house. So money's no object, it can be anywhere. And I want you to describe to me what you're drinking while you're in this room.
Oh, gosh. Okay, well, I'm going to start with the drink first. So I'm going to start with a Di Serrano and Coke.
Classy.
Okay. So in that room, I'm going to say it's going to be a lounge. Mm-hmm. And I'm very much into sort of mid-century. So I'm thinking wood paneling. I'm thinking about dark, rich colors, some opulent kind of textures. And I just love that kind of homely feel. I'm a Cancer the Crab star sign, so I'm very much like very homely, wearing my home and being part of that. Part of that vibe. So something that's, you know, fireplace is going, you've got some good music on, not necessarily TV on, just, you know, enjoying the ambiance.
Yeah.
And of course, enjoying my drink.
Fabulous. And Ross, just slightly different for you, because you design a lot of things and you make a lot of things. I want you to, if you could design one piece for someone famous, who would that be, and what would it be?
That's such a tricky, tricky question. What would it be?
If you could present someone with a gift that you've made, who would it be and what would it be?
So I need a bit of time to think about this. So that was a total curveball.
It was, because I know you'll have listened to the podcast. You're not going to get the same one.
I thought I was getting the same question as Chris. I was all ready for that. I was going to say I want to be in a Manweather Hammers party room when it's finished. But yeah, or a bathroom with a champagne fridge.
Oh, like that one.
But yeah, I think I would give. I'm not a big fan of celebrities. Uh-huh.
A loved one. It could be anything.
I'll tell you what I would really like to do one day. It's a little bit of a sidestep from interiors, but I would love to learn how to make jewellery. Uh-huh. And I'd probably make my mum something really expensive and luxurious, because she never really treats herself to things like that. And it would just be a nice little heirloom for her.
Yes,
yes. So there we go.
I think that's a really good one. And like I say, I was speaking to a good friend of mine who did this jewellery, and I've become addicted to it. Like, once you start researching jewellery and the history and all the different things, it's like stunning. But yeah, so I get that one. So it's a nice wrap up for the heirloom collection. Love that. Yeah. So this is just the final bit. So if people want to find you, I'll say Chris, how do people contact you? What's your email addresses and your social media?
Sure. So primarily we're on Instagram. So it's just the Curious Department on Instagram. And the website is thecuriousdepartment.com, and tend to answer DMs more these days. So yeah, hit us up on Instagram if you want to have a chat.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. So Chris and Ross, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you for coming on the TV Carpenter podcast.
Thanks so much for having us.
What a great reason to start a business, to start a design business. You know, you can't find what you'd like in the shop, so you decide to make it yourself. And what they make and what they create is absolutely beautiful. Who knew a dining plate with a beetle on it would make you want to enjoy the food even more? It really is beautiful. And like I said at the beginning, if you haven't checked out their Instagram, thecuriousdepartment.com is their website, but the Curious Department is their own Instagram, you'll see their beautiful products, and I'm guaranteed you'll definitely want to get something from there. Talking about Instagram, my Instagram blew up this week. So at the beginning of the week, I posted a picture of a bed I created. I got to flex my creative juices a little bit. I was asked to create a room divider for a twin boy and a girl who were, I think they're coming up to about 9 or 10, and the parents were going, well, we can't afford to move, we can't afford to get them separate rooms, but they kind of need their own privacy. Can we create a room divider? And we even talked about putting up a stud wall between the room. And then I saw that they had two single, what were bunk beds, but they were single beds side by side. And I was like, why don't we recreate bunk beds, but make them into like a big room divider? So it's like a bit of a yin yang. So they're all boxed out, and one child accesses it from one side and the other accesses it from the other. And in there, they had like a huge drawer at the bottom where the boy could put his Lego train set. And they each had plug sockets and USB ports and lights within it and shelves within each of their pod. It's really quite hard to explain, but if you look on my Instagram, you can see it. And it created this big room divider, but actually made the room feel bigger because the bed was within the room divider, if that makes sense. Now, the response to this post has gone insane. I've had so many private messages, which is really lovely. But yeah, so check out my Instagram, The TV Carpenter. And I always say on the end of this podcast as well, because I want to encourage you to pick up the tools, go to my IGTV's Instagram TV, and there's a post on there, a how-to post about how to avoid electrics if you're drilling into a wall, because I know that that's what a lot of people are nervous about. So there's some top tips to learn to think about before you drill into a wall, so you know you're not going to hit any water or electrics. And that's on my IGTVs. Now, I hope you enjoyed listening to this podcast today. If you'd like to leave me a message, you can contact me on thetvcarpenter.com. That has links to directs to me to all my social medias and my email address. And also, if you'd like to leave me a 5-star review on iTunes, that would be amazing, because it helps people find us. Ultimately, I want people to be able to learn and learn how to create their dream home. So if you can help facilitate that and share this podcast with other people, I would be eternally grateful. Don't forget, you can get 15% discount off any online purchases from Thorndown. Just go to thorndown.co.uk and type in the code TV Carpenter. But I hope you enjoyed listening to this. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with the Curious Department. Now all that's left for me to say is thank you for listening to me, Wayne Perry, on the TV Carpenter podcast. Mm-hmm.